minutes past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you, lurking conservatives out there in the ether wondering what we're up to. Good morning to you, Mark Riley. I haven't seen you in like 4 days.
Yeah, man. Good morning, Mark Maron.
I'm trying to feel better. Sorry about yesterday, man.
Nah, man. Look, you're a trooper, man. You don't take days off, you know, lightly.
Dude.
Well, you know what?
I felt guilty.
Can I say a special good morning?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know he's not up yet.
Of course.
To David freaking Horowitz, okay? We'll get into that a little later on.
David Horowitz. I was buddies with his son for years, and I still am friends with him, David Horowitz's kids, whose name I'm not going to mention because they are not aligned necessarily.
Really?
Politically. But Horowitz is the guy from, he runs his own little campaign.
Yeah.
To sort of infiltrate the campuses of this country. He's trying to get the liberal professors off of the campuses in a very insidious way. But
yeah.
That all ties back around to some stuff I'm going to talk about in a little while about South Park conservatives. I saw Brian Anderson. You know, it's weird. I was in the hotel room. And to their beautiful credit in Cincinnati, they put me up at a Marriott suite hotel.
Woo!
Well, no, it's not that nice. It's not
with
a nice...
your own coffee maker and microwave?
Yeah, it's the little things, Riley. I tell you, man, it's so weird. Like, you know, I could be put up at a first-class joint, and I'm like, I don't want this. I want a place where I can microwave my silly food. But I didn't even have time to buy food, and then I got sick, and then this and that. But I was watching C-SPAN, too. I was watching Book Talk, and I saw Brian Anderson talk.
Okay.
And I didn't know who this guy was, but this was the guy that wrote that horrible piece on us for the L.A. Times, saying that, you know, Air America Radio was sunk, the ratings stink, the station here in New York doesn't even get the listenership that it did when it was a Caribbean station. He went out of his way to make a point that, you know, saying that liberals aren't funny, that they can't win, that they don't know how to do this. Not only is that a lie, and not only is he jumping the gun, but the guy has the arrogance and the strange, geeky confidence of a revisionist sort of Himmler guy. You can tell he's just one of these tight-ass dudes, you know, with the little glasses on. He's too smart for his own good, and he knows that he's lying because he's an ideologue. He's smart enough to know both sides of what he's talking about, but he's making a choice, and they're trying to appropriate South Park. South Park's conservatives is basically an apology. A conservative apologist is what he is for South Park, because a lot of conservatives are like, this is vulgar, it's heinous, it talks about things it shouldn't be talking about, it's too dirty for kids, but he's saying, no, you're missing the point.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get into what that point is in a little while, because I know he was on Franken's show last week, but I'll tell you something, it got my blood boiling just watching him, and then listening to him talking about Air America, and the very fact that, again, didn't mention my name. Where's my name in the conversation? If you're going to talk crap about something, why not throw my name in there? Would that be so hard?
Well, I mean...
am I being selfish?
Wait a minute, do you want some conservative blow monkey just to mention your name?
Dude, I would like anybody to mention our name outside of this 4 hours that we're in this studio. Do you understand?
Are we in here for 4 hours? I thought it was three.
It's unbelievable what we'd have to do to get our name mentioned out there in the big world of the press.
I love Jerry Springer like he was my father.
All right, okay.
There we go. That'll do it.
You want me to explain that, Chris? Let me hear that again. Yeah.
I love Jerry Springer like he was my father.
See, okay, here's what happened there. I'm in Cincinnati. All right, I'm in Cincinnati. I'm doing the dance. I'm helping out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sherry up there at the affiliate up there at WCKY.
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah, WCKY in Cincinnati. You know, brought me in. You know, and when I got there, I was told that the producer of the Jerry Springer show was mad at me for the comment I made last week. I brought this up on Friday. I'll bring it up again because now I got to answer for this ad. And this is my attempt at being a team player. I get thrown in my face by my own board up. All right, now I understand, Kayla. I understand what's going on.
But wait a minute. What exactly was the comment that irritated him? I never did find this out.
Oh, we didn't talk about it?
No.
Oh, because she was standing right there?
Yeah. You put talked about it anyway, but what the hell?
I had a couple of glaring eyes from the window of that. No, Sherry was very nice, and she was the promotions person up there in Cincinnati. And then Stephanie, this woman, who actually brought me up the night of the performance, is Jerry Springer's producer.
Okay.
Right? And she's like, you know, she was pissed. All right, I have no idea. This isn't even inner office politics here. at Air America. This is inter-office politics, you know, at Clear Channel.
Next door to Kentucky somewhere. Yeah,
Cincinnati, you know, and I'm like, how the hell am I going to know about that? Right? So she tells me that comment I made about the Lindy England trial.
Yeah.
We had brought up that, you know, Charles Grainer was there with, like, two of his ex-wives and a few of his ex-kids. I'm like, wow,
yeah.
Springer should go down there. He could do what he's doing now and cover what he used to do as well.
That's funny.
And of course it's funny. But apparently Springer just wants to deny the fact that he ever had the television show.
I don't know how he could do that. It's on 11 o'clock here in New York.
I know, Riley. You go and watch it every day.
I go and watch it every day.
But, no, it's not that he wants to deny it. He's just trying to distance it. Like, there are two Springers. There's a Springer that's on the air, on Air America, taking our time slot in San Francisco. And then there's a Springer
that has the pay-per-views undressed and uncensored.
Now I'm going to get it all worked up again.
I love Jerry Springer like he was my father.
All right,
so how did that come about?
So how did that happen?
So I don't understand. So she was mad. So you just said you love Jerry Springer like he was your father?
Dude, well, you know how I feel about my father. All right, I love my dad, but it's definitely, it's a touch-and-go thing. Here's what happened. So, I'm going to go do some, some promos for Springer Day because we lead into him in Cincinnati. She wants me to do a bunch of promos. And I know she's still mad. And I'm like, look, all right, I'm going to do these promos. It's going to be great. And then that'll be the end of it. What do you want from me? I love Springer like he was my father. And they've got it on tape. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing I know, there it is.
Oh, wow. So and they're playing that in Cincinnati.
That must have been really comfortable doing the show over there and having these people just look at you and hate you.
No, it was just that. She was just mad because she thought I wasn't a team player, which, generally I'm not. I'm not, I don't know what that means, really. I'm not a great team player. But we did have a few good shows. Some people came out on Friday night. Some woman drove down. Her name escapes me now, but she was a lovely person. She drove 7 hours.
Seven hours?
And she got to, listen to us in some complicated way, like podcasting, but she records it in the middle of the night. But she was so excited. She was just so excited to see my anger live. She's like, I love your anger. Let me near the anger. And her, I don't know if it was her husband or her friend came up. And the people that did come out were very appreciative. They're very excited about the show. But I got to tell you, man, Cincinnati is a trippy place. It's surrounded, a lot of these Democrats and liberals are just surrounded by conservatives to the point where, they're afraid to talk. And you get that. It's an interesting feeling that you've got during the shows because there were still plenty of people that didn't know who I was coming to the show.
Is it kind of like a whole secretive sort of thing among progressives?
Well, but I think that county, Hamilton County, I think is what it is, voted pretty, 50-50. It was not, there are a lot of Democrats there.
Yeah.
A lot of them didn't show up.
Well, they elected Springer mayor once, I guess there must be some progressives.
Yeah, so they're there. I didn't get into too sticky a situation with any Republicans, but I definitely felt it, man. Walking around the radio mill that is Clear Channel over there and doing a couple other shows. What's very fascinating to me, Riley, is you're older than me. I mean,
oh, thanks.
Well, but was it always?
How's Marking the old guy?
Yeah, Marking the old guy. But was it ever different than this? Because there is a tangible tension. Like I was never one to talk about politics, right away with anybody. All right.
Yeah.
But here's a great example. I go do this cat show. I'm going to appear on a couple other radio shows since I'm there in the radio mill. And, I'm going in there as a comedian. And then when they tell the guy that I'm the morning host for Air America, immediately he's like, well, I listen to conservative radio and I host it sometimes. And then all of a sudden the whole dynamic is crap. You know what I mean? He's looking at me like I'm the enemy. He's got a hair up his butt now because of my disposition, because of my job. And we have this interview that's...
Because of your job or because of your politics?
Well, because of what he assumes are my politics.
There it is, because of what he assumes. See, a lot of guys in this business, and this is not new, they assume a whole set of circumstances about you simply when they hear the words Air America.
Right.
They don't know you.
Well, that was the deal. It's like when I was talking to they had me sit down with the salespeople, right? Because you've got a bunch of people who want to get behind the programming. This is unique. It's original programming. It's a type of programming that we got to figure, 50 million people in this country would like to have. And, they don't know how to sell it exactly. And I said, well, sell it. Say that we're funny. We're doing a funny show. We're doing an informative show. Sell me as a whack job. I don't care what you do. But, the truth of the matter is that, we're out here and we're just talking the way we talk. I just don't know when. Apparently, Brian Anderson knows, but I don't know
when. He knows everything.
The cultural language of this country, though, I think in some terms he's right with this, Riley, and we're going to have to talk about it a little more in depth, is that it's really become stilted towards the right to the point where, like we experienced at the beginning of Air America, where people were listening to us and with this weird sort of like, oh, my God, thank God. So clearly, the cultural conversation, certainly on the radio, has been stilted to the right, to the point
where... Oh, yeah, and quite deliberately. This is something that took them 2 decades to pull off. This didn't happen overnight.
Well, now, this people like Brian Anderson and him writing an essay and presenting at the Manhattan Institute and saying that South Park favors conservative ideas without also saying that it doesn't and that it attacks everything and that it is some sort of psycho-libertarian vulgar satire genius, you know, and just saying, well, look, we'll get into what he said about it when we come back, but he's going after the kids. They're going after the kids, people. 16 past the hour.
Morning Sedition.
Just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Mark Maron is with us today. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm okay, Jerry. You know, I'm sitting in the chair you usually sit in here in Cincinnati, and I've taken over the studio. Your producer is now tied up. It's my show, and I'm taking over. And also, I'm just hoping to God, I know the Kentucky Derby is not far from here. I know you've been talking about it all morning.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you honestly, you know, gambling was never my thing, all right?
Yeah.
Everything else was, but not gambling. And now that I don't do anything else, I'm concerned that I'm just going to snap and run to Kentucky and bet it all.
Oh, you got to go.
Yeah,
that's a great event. It's a week. It's what I said earlier in the program. It's a week of party. It's a weekend of partying for 2 minutes of excitement.
You're enabling me, Jerry. You're enabling me. You're telling me to go, I might not ever get out of Kentucky if I go.
Yeah, but think about it.
Yeah.
Listen to what I just said. It's a weekend of partying for 2 minutes of excitement. What does that describe?
A marriage.
Yeah. Yeah, well, at least my sex life.
All right, so that's me talking to Jerry Springer. Being nice, being diplomatic, saying hi to Jerry, Uncle Jerry, because Mark Riley, I didn't want to offend him because I know that you love Jerry Springer.
Love Jerry Springer.
I know you do. I know you do. So we're going to talk now about this guy, Brian Anderson, about South Park conservatism, because he really he got to me watching him speak about this. Basically, his whole premise here is that the legacy of Mort Saul, Lenny Bruce, Woody Allen, the great comics of the 60s and 70s, have been derailed, that they are no longer pertinent, they are no longer important, that the heirs to that type of comedy are now actually different types of comics, comics like Colin Quinn, Nick DiPaolo. Now, these are guys I know, Jim Norton, a tough crowd, and he brings up South Park. Now, South Park... Now, I laugh at South Park. You ever watch it, Riley?
Occasionally. Not since I started working here, though.
I'll tell you, I think it's a genius show. But what this guy has done is he's been able to watch South Park and extrapolate from it and say, look, here's what's going on. You've got a show that appeals to millions of kids. Kids love this. And in this show, they make fun of liberal precepts, of liberal agenda points, of liberal values. They make fun of political correctness. They make fun of hippies. They make fun of Native Americans. They make fun of the affirmative action. And he says, look, we shouldn't dismiss this. I know a lot of you conservatives out there think that this is bad, that it's vulgar, that it's not a good show for kids. But let me tell you something, it is, because we want these ideas to be planted in these kids' heads. Now, obviously, they also make fun of Terri Schiavo. They also make fun of the religious right. They also make fun of corporations. They also make fun of the way the global market works. They make fun of all these conservative ideas as well. But he's willing to dismiss this in an attempt to appropriate South Park to their side, which is what they do. They just absorb what they can out of it, change the language, and make it seem like it's part of their agenda.
Well, you know, what I'm trying to figure out is, do any of these people seriously think that kids are paying attention to these rants?
Well, he doesn't care. I mean, he doesn't care.
Good, because they're not.
Well, I think what he's doing is that you can get this type of language into the kids' heads. This all goes in line with, I think they see the college campus as the last battlefield. You know, I know right now they're talking about the judiciary. The Christian right is saying this is the last battlefield of the liberal left. You know, that's just, they're just paying lip service. That's just a way for them to brand their momentum against the judiciary, and I think hopefully that will fail. But I think what they really see as a big victory for them in the future is getting rid of liberal professors who are tenured on the university campuses. And I think that what Brian Anderson is doing is he's saying, just back off. You know, even you Christian organizations, even people like Brent Bozell, just back off a little bit and let this thing simmer, because this is putting ideas in kids' heads that will later grow to fruition and force them to dismiss some of the liberal legacy that is within college campuses when they become college age. And I think that what we've got to do is we've got to step in here and say that, you know, South Park is not a conservative cartoon. It is not conservative satire. It is pure satire in the Swiftian sense. It is of the legacy of Lenny Bruce. They're just taking the part of it that they like and parading it as being theirs, which is it's a lie, and it's a bad frame. And he's saying things like, look, the real legacy of Lenny Bruce is someone like Nick DiPaolo. Now, I know Nick DiPaolo. I've known him for years. He's a friend of mine to a certain degree, as professional people can be friends, but he's no Lenny Bruce. And the truth of the matter is, you take somebody like Lenny Bruce, and you know this, Mark. Lenny Bruce was the seed of political comedy in the 60s. That, you know, he gave voice to early Richard Pryor. He was the first guy to really sort of break down this sort of language barrier and some of the race barrier. And, you know, and he was the guy that was able to assault the language of racism, break it down, and level the playing field and make us realize that half of racism is about labels. And outside of that, you know, we are just people.
Well, Lenny Bruce pushed the envelope during a time, see, because we've been through a couple of decades where people have pushed the envelopes on a lot of levels, and we're experiencing it now in terms of the Bush White House. They're pushing the envelope. But Lenny Bruce pushed the envelope in a progressive direction at a time when people were really not prepared, to the point, I mean, he was arrested, tried, for God's sake, for the words that he spoke. I mean, in the 21st century, the very notion that someone would end up, you know, facing jail for a comedy routine is, I mean, people would laugh at that.
But the First Amendment issues, yes, and the narcotics charges, of course. But, you know, what's mind-blowing to me is Brian Anderson saying that Nick DiPaolo is the legacy of Lenny Bruce. Lenny Bruce, who fought, you know, for progressive values, who fought to shine a light on racism and its nuances as being, you know, ridiculous in language restricted, that so much about the names and labels we put on people are at the core of how racism persists.
Well, see, the Republicans have figured something out about American culture. Perhaps the progressives need to understand. I want to get back to that when we come back.
And I'm going to play a bit of a Nick DiPaolo routine and just, like, you know, have you assess what he considers to be, you know, the legacy of Lenny Bruce. You know, it's disturbing because they're trying to reframe the culture of comedy, which is sort of important to me.
That's right. Come back and be disturbed here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great.
Kalo on the board there, P.W. McDonald in the booth. We're moving forward. Hey, look, you can podcast Morning Sedition Talk. Take the show with you every day. Go to morningsedition.com for details on podcasting. I met our podcasting guy in Cincinnati. Bob came with his friend and introduced himself and got him into the show. Thanks
All right.
for coming down, Bob. This guy's been doing it out of the goodness of his heart.
Really?
You know, putting together this podcasting. I haven't even got an iPod. You know,
me neither.
I'm not so shameless, Apple. If you want to give me an iPod, I'll certainly experiment with it. If you want to give it to me.
Maren, let's go shopping after.
Oh, you're going to get me to buy one? Are you going to buy one?
We'll go and see.
All right. I want to get back to this comedy thing, because something has gone wrong. I'm not going to tell you that something hasn't gone wrong culturally with comedy. I mean, look at the success of the Blue Collar Comedy Tour. Look at them now, the Blue Collar Sketch Show. Now, look, I'm in the business. I know these guys, all right? I also know that Hee Haw was very popular a few years back. I understand that there's a market for this stuff, but it seems to me that it's coming out of nowhere. And when all the generations, my generation comics, and then the generation a few minutes after me, kind of went the hipster path, not. You know, there was a bunch of very intelligent, sort of creative comics that refused to touch politics and just became sort of hipsterish, this sort of Lower East Side, sort of Brooklyn, sort of self-indulgent. And I get accused of being that, but that's not where I started. You know, I started by, you know, listening to Kennison, by listening to Carlin, by listening to Lenny Bruce and Richard Pryor. Those were my heroes. And, you know, a few Borscht Belt guys, Rickles and Buddy Hackett. But the bottom line is something is going on in comedy, and I am concerned about it. There is not much of a left-wing political voice in comedy, and it's not because people aren't funny. I actually think it's because people are afraid. These guys, they go out on the road, and I know it for me. There are very few people that have the courage to go up against an audience that doesn't know who they are and preach the ideology of all-encompassing liberal politics through comedy. Comedy used to be progressive. It used to be a liberal voice. You look at the great comedy of the late 50s, 60s, and 70s. All of it was coming from our side.
Well, what you got here, Mark, is the attempt by the right to effect the same kind of incremental change in comedy, on college campuses, and in these other, what they consider to be bastions of liberalism, that they tried to do with media. And the easiest way to understand how they do this is look at the radio format that's euphemistically called smooth jazz. Now, smooth jazz radio has very little to do with what most people who know about jazz would consider jazz music. Has nothing to do with it. Sade is not a jazz artist, but she's on smooth jazz radio. Why? Because the people that created the format set out to define what jazz was differently than what people had come to become familiar with. And that's exactly what these guys are doing. These guys are going out and saying, well, wait a minute, don't talk bad about South Park. Create our own frame around South Park. Let us define what South Park is for enough people, and that will be to our benefit. This is exactly the same thing that they did with radio format.
Well, it scares me because, you know, they've got a certain amount of momentum now, and it just frightens me because I know when I'm on stage and I'm facing that a primarily conservative crowd that doesn't know who I am, which is a great shame having done this as long as I have, is that you got to push them, and you know you're going to be pushing up against an ideological wall that's not going to give, and you know, and it's very draining, and it can make your throat hurt. See, like what's happening right now. But you do it anyways. You know, one of the greatest comics of doing this was Bill Hicks, and I think it gave him cancer. You know, Bill Hicks used to go out there and push progressive values in a very radical, satirical way, and you know, it would fall on deaf ears because most people aren't smart enough to have their own opinion. Most people, the opinion they have was given to them by the simplicity of talk radio or the simplicity of another ideologue that made them understand it in a way. They don't engage. Even when I talk to this DJ in Cincinnati, that, you know, this guy, I tried to have a conversation with him about Social Security, and he was like, look, most people don't need it. Smart people don't need Social Security. They don't rely on it afterwards. So you get these talking points that justify a type of contempt and narrow-mindedness in conservatives that it disable their ability to even engage in empathy for other people, in the diversity of things, in the thing that's unique about all the different races and all the different issues. See,
Yeah, but that guy was a hypocrite, Marin. He's not giving his money back.
No,
if he's so smart, tell him to give his Social Security to somebody else, like those other folks we talked to.
Well, they're all hypocrites. My whole issue is with political correctness. Is there are some elements of political correct thinking that I find annoying, but there are other things that I thought were very helpful in terms of bringing up the confidence and the presence of diversity of people in the social landscape that we live in now. And I don't think that at this point in time, political correctness is a threat that these people see it as, and that attacking it more is just to program the youth of this generation to prepare themselves when they go into college to shut down any sort of talk that seems progressive or liberal.
Political correctness is part of those incremental steps that people are taking, people on the right are taking, to solidify what they consider to be their base. They do not have some of the same solidifiers, for want of a better term, that the left does have. We just don't always take advantage of the ones that we have. Unfortunately, they understand that as they begin to co-opt these different including the French. Do you think a progressive ever came up with the term political correctness? Political correctness was coined by the right wing in this country to talk about speech that they wanted to engage in but felt constrained to do during public discourse.
Well, let me just say this, guy. Lenny Bruce was a champion of fighting racial inequality, of fighting racism in language. He pushed the envelope in terms of creating satire that went over the acceptable censorship levels at the time and what he thought was right about religion, about race, about sex, about drugs, about any number of things. You know, this guy really pushed it out there. And now what I found in my comic peers after 9/11 was there were a group of guys that really thought after 9/11 they really believed that every Muslim should be thrown out of America. And I never even entertained that idea. But the idea that these guys were Muslim, so why not just get all of them out and sort through it later, was a real political idea for some of these guys. And they were able to rally around this idea and decide that this was an ideology. This was a new American ideology. We don't have to have patience or tolerance or acceptance of races, certainly not Muslims, in this country after what they did. And that started to filter out to all races. And then you had this comic language of saying, basically saying that the reason there are racial stereotypes is because some of them fit. So let's play that out. Let's all be proud of racial stereotyping and make that an assault on political correctness. Let's, like, for instance, in comparison to Lenny Bruce trying to break through racism, this is who Brian Anderson says is Lenny Bruce's true heir. Can we hear that, Chris?
I live in Astoria, Queens. There's the other six white people that live there. Thank you. The FBI says they're having trouble penetrating these terrorist cells. Bullshit. Move to my neighborhood. I've been buying fruit from the Taliban for 4 years.
Not only is that, you know, a relatively, you know, hacky premise, the terrorist, you know, deli owner, but it's just an intolerance that, you know, people find relief in now because this is the way that the pendulum is swinging. It's okay to be racist. That is what this kind of comedy is saying. That is, they're saying political correctness engages in, you know, diversity and a level playing field.
Yeah, but he's lying. He's lying.
Yeah, of course.
Ask yourself, who represents Astoria? What elected, are there any elected officials of color that represent Astoria? Of course not. The bottom line is, Astoria has been known for years, and I'm surprised this guy doesn't know it, as a great neighborhood.
Yeah, but I think it's just a general sense of, like, diversity is bad because we don't know who these people are. We are the true Americans, that Americans don't need to tolerate or stay on a level playing field with any immigrants, and that this is the way America stays strong. And it's not. America stays strong by embracing, you know, diversity, by embracing, you know, tolerance, by making democracy work for people who come to this country and want to embrace it, not by pushing them all aside and creating this sort of, like, you know, dominant race theory. I just don't believe that's the way this country was built.
Of course it isn't, but what's happening now is that media, some media, is trying to blunt that message. That was the real message in that United Church of Christ commercial that ABC would not take. I've seen it.
Yeah.
And that is what they weren't just talking about gay people. They were talking about, you know, people of different religious persuasions, different or of no religious persuasion at all. They were trying to be inclusive. And being inclusive bothers some people because they feel like they still have some turf, whether it be racial, ethnic, religious, or whatever, to defend. And what you have now is an energized base that is out here not just to defend what they see as their religious turf, but to expand their religious turf to include everybody, even people who completely disagree with their religious frame.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I also think on the other side of this is also keeps a sort of steady simmer culturally with this type of comedy, a steady simmer of dividing and conquering ourselves. That, you know, in order for, you know, people don't want, like, what was the word you used? They don't want common ground. They don't want, they'd rather there be an acceptable friction. You know, there are kids and grown-ups out there that are comfortable with with having racial anger. And they want to be validated in it. They want to make it like so it's cute. Hey, we can do this because we're on the same page here. But I still think it's a dividing tactic. And I think that it helps to divide people. It doesn't help people accept one another. It doesn't help people garner respect for people that are different. All it does is it accepts a sort of dividing factor.
Well, that dividing factor, Mark, has been around since the founding of the country. There was a time there was a time when Harlem was divided up not just by race but by ethnicity. There were certain blocks in Harlem that you could not walk across because they were Irish or because they were Italian or because they were whatever. This was part of the history of the country, and these guys want to bring back that time because they don't want to acknowledge that the breaking down of those barriers represents any form of progress whatsoever.
But it must represent progress.
Of course it does.
What do you think? 866-303-2270. Do you have any input on this cultural debate about comedy, about diversity, about a new wave that we're facing in terms of culture against progressive values that's clearly, you know, starting to dominate the airwaves on all levels? It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Hey, 50 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. Happy to be back. A little under the weather. Sorry about the voice. Hope it's not freaking anybody out. Got a little nasally, a little phlegmy.
I got a question for you.
What's that, buddy?
Because you do the stand-up thing, and you do get in the faces of the people that may be conservative in your audience. Do you ever get a sense that there's an undertone of violence in the way in how they approach political dialogue with progressives?
Dude, I think personally, most people in this country have no political opinion whatsoever. I think most people are playing team sports, for Christ's sake. And that's what I think.
So what's
wrong
with it?
There's a lot wrong with it, in that they're just sort of like, hey, I'm a Republican. What does that mean? Doesn't matter, man. I like that guy. I like George Bush.
Oh, that
because,
kind of team
because
sport.
You know, he makes me feel strong. These guys make me feel strong. It's a narrow, you know, given the opportunity, most people would rather not deal with complications. They would rather not deal with diversity. They would rather not deal with really having to weigh out what justice is or what ethics are. They would much rather just say, look, you're wrong because, and that's wrong because someone told me, and you know, and I like this guy because he knows how to make people get things done. I like tough love. I like this spousal abuse model of government. You know, a lot of people succumb to fear. A lot of people just want to feel empowered by whoever's around.
Oh, this is the Larry Elder Take Responsibility School.
Kinda. You know, I got a little flack second show Saturday night. There was some woman sitting up front, and I had some drunk guy up front, and I started making fun of Bush. And the guy goes, that's my Texas boy, man. Don't be saying that. You watch it. He's my Texas boy. And I'm like, really? He's your Texas boy? And I started to go into it, but I had showed too much of myself before in the show. You know, I'd done my whole kind of like, you know, half a wuss speech and this, that, and the other thing. And then some woman says, well, you know, you get over it. You know, get over the election. Like, get over. See, but I didn't get any sense that she had any, you know, political perspective whatsoever other than being a bully and other than we won, so you shut up. And I think that's what a lot of them are like. Just shut up, loser. Quit crying. And that's where I think they're coming from.
But is it shut up or I'll shut you up?
I haven't gotten much of that.
Oh,
yeah, thank
okay,
God.
Right.
I don't know how far away we are from that. But, you know, certainly
that's just curious.
That happens more with religion, actually. Scott, listening to KTLK in Los Angeles. How are you, Scott?
Hey, Scott.
Doing all right. This is a very interesting discussion. I think that your observation a moment ago about how people want to align themselves with somebody who's in power, and then they can feel like they can make fun of victims and make fun of people who are weak, and that way maybe they can be in denial or stay in denial about the possibility that they ever might find themselves in that situation themselves.
Right.
You know, what's interesting is what you were talking about, the role of comedy. I remember it seems like it was a dozen years ago at least, maybe longer, when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're hearing lawyer jokes right and left. I mean, you know, it was just one day there were no lawyer jokes. The next day, everybody had a lawyer jokes. Late night talk shows, and I smelled a rat at the time and figured that it was probably the insurance industry or somebody who was paying joke writers to start disseminating these.
Really?
That was always the rat that I smelled.
Jokeola?
What's that?
Jokeola? Kind of like payola, but only for joke writers.
Jokeola, right? Jokeola. And you know what's interesting is think about what's happened in the time since. Consumer rights of investors, basically, the retirees who are trusting Morgan Stanley with their life savings, the rights of employees have been eroded in the courts, and there's been this big push for what's called so-called tort reform.
Right, restricting victims' rights.
Right. Just stop on the victims. And what's interesting is that, you know, it's mostly founded on lies.
Right.
It's founded on all lies.
It's all founded on lies.
Yeah, the idea.
So what's the broader point about comedy and culture that you have?
Well, I think the broader point is that if you're really clever and you want to effect a change which gives you a windfall, let's say you're an insurance company or a manufacturer and you want to reduce the cost of you know, being responsible.
Okay, so if the bad guys want to win, they do what?
Well, get the jokes out there. Start by getting people on your side by making them make fun of somebody who's really on their side.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's a
joke. They'll shoot themselves in the foot.
That's an interesting premise. Hey, thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks for your call.
I think what he's saying, I don't know if there was a joke payoff, but I think that not unlike the frames that are distributed by the right-wing talking point machine, like right now we're seeing the obstructionist frame. They, you know, all of them are saying the word obstructionist in terms of Democrats who want to filibuster judicial nominations. Now, all of a sudden, in the last week, every right-wing talking head is saying obstructionist Democrats. They're obstruction. They want to obstruct the process of the Senate. They want to obstruct legislation that will help the economy. They are obstructionists. They are standing in the way, which they aren't. They're using the only tool they have within the Senate. But he's saying basically that they disseminate similar ways. Now, if there is a strong cultural machine in terms of, you know, conservative sympathizers within the comedy community and within the world of television to be sympathetic to these causes, which I'm sure there are to some degree, it'd be an interesting poll to take. How are you, Terry, listening in South Carolina?
Hey, Terry.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good, man.
Okay. I was commenting. I think you guys forgot about two pretty loud liberal voices, and that would be Chris Rock and Bill Maher.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if they're insanely liberal. Bill Maher sort of rides a libertarian line, but he's definitely out there doing the work, as is Chris Rock. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, but, you know, Chris Rock is an interesting case, too, because I would not call him a doctrinaire liberal. I've heard
him do
some pretty rough stuff, and I think he kind of more like calls it the way he sees it than to come down and squarely in the camp of either progressive or conservative.
And Bill Maher certainly, in some issues, is very liberal. He's certainly a thoughtful guy, and I appreciate his point of view because he's one of the few comics that has one, but certainly when it comes to women and a couple of other things, I'm not sure he's essentially towing the progressive line, but he is calling the dominant structure on its,
I did the same thing yesterday.
On its, on its crap, so to speak. I'm going to fix my machine. But pigs seem to be fine for that moment.
When
we come back, we're going to hear from a voicemail in response to this mayor in Spokane who is accused of child molestation. Rachel was talking about it yesterday, and we got the trippiest voicemail, dude.
Absolutely. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Yeah, Kayla on the board. P.W. McDonald in the booth.
Dan Passman, son of Lewis and Linda Passman, in the studio with a special thank you. What's going on? What did I miss? Apparently a care package came, and I missed it.
It was a care package for the ages, Mark. Riley saw it. I'm not sure if Kayla saw it. I'll bring the goods back in sometime soon so you can see it.
Yeah, absconded with the goods immediately.
Yeah, man.
Well, it was so great that I was afraid to even leave it unattended.
All right, well, get on with it.
We got to thank Penelope, one of our most loyal listeners.
Out in Wyoming. On the ranch. Yeah.
That's right. Penelope sent an engraved wooden baseball bat engraved with the logo of Air America Radio and engraved to say Air America Radio Jim Earls 2005. That is the company's softball team that I founded. And it was very, very nice, and it's really awesome.
Oh, you founded the team?
I did.
When are you going to win a stinking game?
We've had two moral victories, for your information, Mark.
Moral victories.
Moral victories.
One of them was a moral slaughter.
13-3 and 6-0?
Yeah, the 6-0 was a moral slaughter.
I swear to God.
We crushed them morally.
His optimism. If Cashman weren't here in the morning, I probably would have put a gun in my mouth months ago.
Yeah, he was a cheerleader at the Alamo in a previous life. My God.
There, at the last game, our bat was stolen before the first pitch, and Dan was like optimistic. Like, yeah, man, don't worry about it. It's cool.
Bat. Yeah, what, you knew Penelope was sending a replacement?
That's a trophy case bat. You don't use that bat.
Correct. It's display purpose.
It's not like it came from a tree struck by lightning like in The Natural.
Maybe it did. But it even came with a little mounting peg so it could be hung on the wall.
I got to be honest with you. Guilty Pleasure, it's one of my favorite movies. I don't even know why. I'm not a baseball guy, but I mean, I love the way they honor the heroic mythic structure. The hermeneutic code, my friend.
Yes.
The fall and then the rise again and the creepy woman who, you know, you don't know really what happened, but he's got shot.
And then Glenn Close
was awesome.
Yeah. The music and the slow motion pitch and the ball hits the lights. And,
yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't know. That bat made me think of Casino.
Yeah?
Yeah. The
end. That's weird. Why did you go with that?
I got hit for a home run.
Here we're talking about some beautiful baseball. Yeah. Now I got to think of that horrible skull sound.
Well,
Scorsese must have worked for hours on that. It's like, it's going to really sound like he's hitting the body.
Right.
The worst. Now it's breakfast. Well, thank you, Penelope. Thanks,
Jim. What did she say? Popcorn, three different types of bubble yum.
Yeah, and sunflower seeds.
And sunflower seeds.
Chew in the dugout.
Barbecue sunflower seeds.
Yeah. That's so weird. Riley's like, and the barbecue one. Like, that stuck in his head.
And Air America Radio, Jim Earls will be taking on the New Yorker magazine tonight.
Oh, boy.
What's going to be the final score this time, Dan? Co-founder prognosticate for.
I'm sure that we will crush them morally.
Dude, you've got to beat.
And lose 13-0.
You've got to beat the New Yorker. Can't you beat the New Yorker?
I think so. I hope to send them back to their shrink's offices and their cartoon couches.
Yeah, well, listen to you.
Yeah.
Shrink's offices, cartoon couches. Whose side are you on in the comedy debate? You're condescending to the good old school of analytical comedy, the whiny sort of like, hey, I got problems comedy.
Hey,
All right, listen, self-actualized, confident guy. Get out.
Yeah. I hope Henrik Hertzberg beans you in the game.
All right, so that's interesting. See, this is there is two. Even what Dan Passman was saying about comedy, like there's a certain type of New York intellectual comedy that stands on its own, that is a dying breed, that is also part of that liberal legacy. And you know, people, we're gonna put the topic aside for now. But how we combat this, you know, I don't know, because I was talking to you about black comedy on the break, and that even there's a lot of young black comics, there's a lot of young white comics, there's a lot of young Latino comics that honor the racial divide more than they talk about, you know, moving past it.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just because it's easier to do that. It's easier to preach to the choir. It's easier to preach to people of your own ilk. And it's a lot harder to put forth concepts and principles and ideas that are actually progressive and embracing diversity than the other. And it's only easy because it comes from a narrow-minded point of view, and it comes from a place where it will be received, a place of intolerance and a place of anger. And, you know, I don't know how we progress, because this, to me, it's a backslide. What Brian Anderson is talking about in terms of promoting anti-politically correct comedy is a backslide into a time of separation, not a time of moving towards anything. And I think it also reveals these sort of not so, you know, sublime racist agenda of conservatism.
Well, look, I mean, when somebody says there are only six white people in Astoria, I know they live in a very different world than I inhabit.
Yeah. We got a quick call from Steve in response to Dan Pashman. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, good morning.
Hey.
I don't have a lot of time for a topic, but on hold, I just noticed that there are a lot of similarities between Pashman's softball team and Bush's Iraq war effort. They're both 0-2 and claiming moral victory.
Oh, you've done it now.
Boy, I guess you know what? You're right. Pashman is sort of a framing genius.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a moral victory. Hey, how do you get... Oh, he's back in the studio
oh,
now.
Oh, man. We need to get one of them jackets like Bush.
How do you respond to that? He's saying that you're analogous to the way the Bush is, that you're spinning a loss into a moral victory, not unlike our president.
Yeah. I guess it's apt in certain ways, but I would disagree because in the Iraq War, see, there's a loser, too, in the Iraq War. You know, you're spinning this thing, but see, when the generals take the field, everybody wins.
Now you're just trying to be obstructionist.
Oh, yeah. now you're being an obstructionist.
Oh, right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Everyone ends up happy when the generals play, and I think that's the important thing is whether you happen to have a victory based on a score or a victory based on morality or a moral victory like we have. At least everyone goes home happy.
I think
that's because they all get drunk.
What did you say, Steve?
It's starting to sound more and more like O'Reilly every minute.
Oh, that's a low blow.
All right, wait, Dan. Why don't you just go ahead and tell them about the civilian casualties of last week's softball game?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks for your call, Steve.
Thanks a lot. Wow.
Yeah.
Pashman. Pashman.
So, yeah, all right. Yeah. So what, you got any more to say on that, Pashman, or what?
Go Jim Earls.
Okay.
Well, now we'll switch gears. We'll switch gears out of this comedy thing. Let's talk about what is now seemingly an unfolding case of the horrors of closeted homosexuality.
Is that what it is?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how you characterize it.
Yes.
Let's set up the story, will you, O'Reilly?
Okay. We're talking, of course, about the mayor of Spokane, Washington, Mr. Jim West, who has admitted to, at the very least, being bisexual, to having carried out a number of liaisons with young men that he met on a couple of different websites and in internet chat rooms. There are allegations now coming forward by two different individuals that this same Mayor Jim West, who, by the way, had aspirations one day to become governor of Washington State, a former paratrooper, and a staunch Republican, an opponent of gay rights.
Uh-huh.
They are saying there's two individuals, one of whom is in jail now, say that West molested them 20-some-odd years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's weird, Riley, that it, in terms of how this is, let me just, what's bothering me right now, let me just take this quick call, because I know it's about our other topic, but I think it's going to play into the topic we're talking about now in just a few minutes. Rob in Manhattan listening to 1190. How are you? What's up, Rob?
Yeah, guys, I just want to tell you, first of all, just very quickly, I'm a very avid listener of Air America. Thank God you're on.
Yes.
I'm a gay man. I live in Manhattan. Now, I don't know whether to talk about South Park here because I told your screener I wanted to mention about something I heard, but I'll go to the Mayor West.
Mm-hmm.
I just read about the fact also that Mayor West used to be a Boy Scout leader.
Yes.
Yes.
Best friend Han.
Yes.
Who
yes.
committed suicide? Who was a pedophile?
Right. We're gonna get into that.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
And there's another guy named Roby who was the leader of a different Boy Scout troop who also committed suicide.
Wait, we'll get into the news of it, but I mean, you had a comment to make about gay stereotyping, and I wanted
well,
to hear
that. Well, I actually wanted to talk about South Park because unfortunately, I do listen to Air America a lot, but every so often I'm a mental masochist and I turn to some conservative talk shows.
Just to get that hate buzz, I know.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Exactly. I love it, great. But, you know, there was this young man, you know, he's a young conservative and he's trying to imitate Sean Insanity.
Yeah.
And in the process of it, you know, they talked about this scene in South Park.
Okay.
In which there are these men that are talking about, you know, we should all have our rights, and we should be liberal, and we should all be understanding to one another. And the group turns out to be NAMBLA.
Right, I remember that. I remember that.
The boy stands up and he says, "Hey, dude, you molest a little boy."
Yeah.
And what should have really have happened, you know, I mean, people have to understand this. First of all, NAMBLA is the a radical fringe group of the gay community. They are not respected at all.
Yes.
And they are violating someone's rights.
Right, absolutely.
And what they should have done in that cartoon is had someone stand up and say, hey, those dudes are violating a child's rights. It has nothing to do with consensual sex between the privacy of two men.
Well, yeah, well, this, you're
no, and they're trying to show this extreme, they're trying to show this, oh, these are these extreme liberals.
Well, yeah, no, I think that what happened there is, like, whether they are not that, whatever should have happened in the cartoon is not the issue. The issue is that the conservatives are taking that as being representational of liberal gay community.
That's exactly what this talk show host was doing. There was no mention, because I never watched South Park, but there was no mention of all the criticisms of religions and conservatives or anything.
Sure.
So I don't know about that, but you mentioned that.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that they were pointing out, see, we're really getting ahead with young people. They're really going to be conservative because of this.
Yeah, and I think it is the way they appropriate things and the way they misrepresent things that we're talking about. We're going to talk about it a little more. Really appreciate your call, Rob.
All right, thanks a lot.
You take care. 17 past the hour. We're going to come back. We're going to get into this Jim West story. We're going to talk about, you know, about some of the issues that that Rob was just talking about now. One of the things that pops out in my mind is that this is a Republican mayor who came out against gay rights, who has tried to put through anti-gay legislation, who was living the secret life of a homosexual man and of a potential child molester. Is that self-hatred and his lack of self-acceptance driving that? And is a guy like this, even in a world where gay people could feel more comfortable coming out, isn't this the kind of guy that might continue to keep it secretive and continue to hate himself publicly and through legislation? These are just speculations, but we're getting to the truth of the matter when we come back. It's 18 past the hour now.
Hi, this is Charles Barkley. When I want to get caught up on the world event and I can't get in touch with Shaq, MJ, Larry, or Manute Bol, I turn to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Past the hour, Mark Maron here and Mark Riley.
Good morning.
How's it going?
It's going.
All right, buddy. So I guess I got to go to therapy this week, finally, after months, it seems like.
Uh-oh.
That's all right. I'm not ashamed to go to therapy, even though it's turned into more of a political conversation between my therapist and I. But here's my dream from last night. So I'm in Cincinnati, alone in my hotel room with my empty fridge, not even pay-per-view. There's a knock on the door. I open it, and hundreds of people start coming into my room. Publicists and temps and bus drivers and traffic cops and secretaries and bureaucrats and libertarians and progressive utopians with no sense of humor and Jerry Springer and more. They all pile in, and they're all smiling and shaking my hand and welcoming me to Cincinnati. The entire cheerleading team from the University of Cincinnati comes in and starts chanting, Mark, 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 and doing backflips. The Bearcat mascot sits on my lap and messes up my hair. Then a farmer brings me a ham and a bushel of corn and introduces me to his twin daughters, Mandy and Candy. Then the entire outfield of the Cincinnati Reds comes in and gives me season tickets, and a high school drama class comes in and wants to talk about my theory of comedy. Then a class gives me a bundle of red balloons, and a little kid with a great big eyes asks me to go to the park with him and play catch, and Springer gives me a cigar and the keys to his Mercedes, and then someone tries to give me a kidney. That was weird. It was in an ice cooler. Here, have a kidney. Then the mayor gives me the giant brass key of the city, kisses me on both cheeks, and proclaims it Mark Maron Day. Then a marching band comes in and starts playing The Wind Beneath My Wings, and it's getting really loud. So I stand up on a chair and I yell, hey, hey, hey! They all look at me in silent and stunned. A balloon pops. I yell, what the hell's the matter with you people? You're creeping me out. Come on. You don't even know me. Everyone gets this hurt look, and they all file out slowly. The little kid with the baseball mitt starts crying. The Bearcat mascot shuffles out with his tail between his legs. The clown gets right in my face and says, you're an a-hole. You know that? And then he spit on me. The clown. Wow. I woke up, and my bed was filled with Bengals sweatshirts.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to cough.
That's okay.
A lot of people use the cough button, but I don't want you to miss anything. You know, I want you to be part of the process. You know, I know this is radio, but I want you to be part of the process here. So let's get into this Jim West story a little bit, Riley. So this guy, first of all,
The reason they got him, you know, he was accused of child molestation. He was thought to be homosexual. Of course, the gay community in Spokane knew he was homosexual probably for 15 years now.
Well, I don't know. But
come
you know
on.
What,
you they know always what, know.
You know what did happen? First of all, these guys, the two guys who are accusing him of having molested them when they were kids, have been out here in the ether for some time. People just weren't really paying a great deal of attention to their accusations.
Well, you know, Rachel talked about it on the show yesterday, and we got a phone call, a voicemail, that I think we should hear before we get into this. So let's hear it, Chris.
Hi, I enjoyed the show today, except I find that Rachel Maddow an extremely annoying individual. The story that she reported on would have been interesting if the guys were allowed to run with it, and the banter was good, and okay, it was a semi interesting story, I suppose. I don't think it was as earth-shattering as it was advertised to be. But Rachel Maddow is an extremely pushy, arrogant individual. I know she thinks, it's apparent from her tone and her manner, that she thinks she's the best thing walking. And I'm tired of her. And I am tired of her constantly pushing her gay agenda. Everybody on this planet by now knows she's a lesbian. I don't care. And I'm tired of her constantly turning everything into the gay agenda as if they're always victims. There are other victims on this planet, unfortunately, and I'm sick and tired of her
end of messages.
Yeah, well, she got cut off by the shoe. Wow, that was really personal.
Yeah.
I had no idea that, you know, I mean, it was just like a diatribe on Rachel.
Was it Slag Rachel Day or something? What was the
issue? How was Rachel characterizing that yesterday?
Well, I mean, she wasn't characterizing it, I don't think, in a way that would offend most normal people. What she was saying, in essence, was that the kind of thing that Jim West was involved with had something to do with his being closeted, with his not being able to be an out gay man. Now, there's no guarantee that were he out, that he might not have acted in the same fashion.
Well, I believe that closeted homosexuality, repressed homosexuality, is at the core of a lot of evil that's gone on in this world. Ever.
Oh yeah,
and that's a good question. Even if this was a world made for gay people, would a guy like Jim West embrace that and not behave this way? We're going to talk about that and the journalistic integrity of how they caught this guy.
Yeah.
After this.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Mark Riley there.
Yep.
Good morning, edition on Air America Radio. Spokane Mayor Jim West, only public comments on the case against him before he decided to take a vacation, quote, I have 1,150 days left in my term of office, and each and every one of those days will be dedicated to serving the city, except for October 18th, ticket for Bette Midler. But,
now, he's taking a couple of weeks off. He is not resigning, but he's taking a few weeks off to gather his thoughts and prepare a defense against, quote, the false allegations leveled against me. And again, those are the allegations leveled by the two guys who say that West molested them.
Okay, so you got these allegations. So this, the editor of the paper there, you know, gets a surrogate, a guy to go online.
A consultant, yes.
Yeah, okay, same thing, right? Surrogate.
Well, no, this guy is a specialist in this kind of online entrapment thing.
Okay, so he goes online, poses as a teenage boy who at the time the relationship was started, he was 17, he became 18 during the interaction.
Yes.
You know, and he caught the, you know, and the mayor got on there with his little code word. And I've read some of these transcripts. What's interesting about some of the transcripts is, you know, number one, it doesn't necessarily validate it doesn't prove that he's a child molester, but it certainly helps. And the big thing to me about a case like this is a guy, this is a closeted guy who's made statements in the interactions that I saw online saying that he's not comfortable with the way gay men act. He's not that kind of a gay man. Like, he knows he's gay, but this is a guy that even if he were allowed to be out, wouldn't be out. And that lack of self-acceptance has something to do with the way that he legislates against gays. He's trying to protect his own secret homosexuality, and also he's manifesting his self-hatred out into the world by making people pay. And I think this has been at the core of a lot of hostility, a lot of violence, and a lot of control freakiness since the beginning of time. It's people's inability to accept their sexuality. Now, the other thing I wanted to get at before you jump in on this, Riley, is that, you know, if this is true, and I read this article about this guy, you know, about his buddy Han, the other scoutmaster, who eventually couldn't live with himself and killed himself because he did molest one of these kids, is that the victim, then 12, said he was molested by Han, who was a friend of Jim West.
Jim West, yes.
And a scoutmaster at the time, he said Han told West, he said the kid who was molested by Han then told West about it the next day, and West told him to, quote unquote, forget it. All right, see, this is the way predators work. This is the way that priest Shandy, is that his name, Shanley? He's the one.
Shanley, yeah.
This is how they work. They're pathological. They're sick, psychopathic guys. They feed on kids, and they don't think of them as real people. They just think of them as these abusable objects. And it's a sick state of affairs because this happens with pedophiles of both gender orientations. And I think the real crime here is that if you have a guy like that who's operating within the government at all, I mean, if it proves to be true at all, it's not a matter of homosexuality or closet homosexuality or anything like that, is that people who are sexual predators of teenagers and children are sick, pathological, you know, dysfunctional human beings who need to be in treatment or need to be in prison. And that's just the bottom line. These people have more power than anybody to hurt a person for life. These people that were abused by priests or abused by anybody, their chances, if you're abused when you're a kid, like 5 or, you know, 6 or 10 or 15, it doesn't matter. If you're taken advantage of by a grown-up, you know, when you're that age, the rest of your life is going to be a reaction to that abuse. One way or the other, you are never going to come back from that. And these people are, you know, should be treated like the criminals that they are.
Well, at this point, Jim West will likely not see the inside of a jail. They have known, law enforcement in the Spokane area apparently has known about the allegations made by these two specific guys for a long time. And have never, because of their own criminal histories, have never really investigated it on any level of depth. It looks like now maybe they're going to start. But in terms of his activities of late, there's nothing they can get him on.
Yeah.
The liaisons that he actually did have, and which, by the way, he has admitted to, happened with 18-year-olds. So there is no crime there. Apparently under Washington law. Now, you can make an argument that he was using his office, you know, to offer these kids internships and that sort of thing, and that's an ethical problem. But in terms of whether he violated the law with the liaisons that he has admitted to having, the answer is probably no.
Susan in Boston, what's on your mind?
Oh, hello, Mark. I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you.
I just wanted to speak to what you said earlier about how a lot of the problems that we have come from closeted and repressed homosexuality. I just wanted to expand that and say that I think a lot of our problems come from repressed sexuality in general.
Sure.
And that, you know, a lot of these Republicans, they seem to be terrified of sex.
Yes.
They just absolutely, they're terrified of life.
Yes.
And so I just wanted to say that because I think the points you're making are really good, but I think that they expand to all of us.
Could you imagine if you were a kid who got pregnant from an incestuous rape and then you were forced to have that baby because of Republican policy? Could you imagine that, the double scarring that would cause?
It does scar you for life, and that would then scar your kids.
Ugh.
And so, and this happens all the time. I have a friend that runs a shelter, and people are being abused all the time and by both sexes, and, you know, and
it's a horrendous, it's a closeted problem in this country. The amount
comes,
happens.
A lot of it comes from our fear of sex in this country, and especially by the conservatives.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, West, while mayor, and by the way, while he was also a state senator, I believe, was prepared to try to legislate and criminalize sexuality between teenagers, gay and straight. So, you know, this was a guy who was conflicted on a lot of different levels, certainly in terms of you know, the kind of policy positions he took. And this was a guy who was powerful enough to actually talk to one of these kids about, or actually to talk to the guy who was working for the newspaper about running for governor someday.
Look, if you can teach people to be afraid of sex, you're teaching them to be afraid of themselves. You know, sexual repression has been used forever to try to keep people under control. It's been used by religions. It's been used by governments. I mean, you get people like Freud who says that sexual repression is the basis of most neurotic behavior, which, you know, I still believe on some level is true. There's a lot of Freudian stuff that I still think is true, even though he's been discredited on some levels. Not that one. Wilhelm Reich, who, you know, ended up dying in a prison because of his, you know, his ideas, once said that, look, if you start educating people properly about sex when they're in their teens, we will have a lot less neurotic society. You will have a society that is self-accepting. You will have a culture that is self-accepting. But these idiots use it as a wedge issue. What do you think the moral majority, and what do you think of, like, James Dobson and his people are trying to do with sex now, trying to frighten teenagers, trying to, you know, tell them that they have no reproductive freedom? It's all about control. It's always been an area where if you frighten people of sexuality, if you frighten them of their own sexuality, if you tell them that their sexuality is wrong, it is such a strange and personal universe that if you start stepping on that, you can step on their necks, you know, metaphorically. You keep them under control. This is not a new game. Kathy, listening in Portland, how are you?
Hi, Kathy.
I'm good, thank you. Hi. Can you, am I coming in?
You are.
I'm coming in great.
What's up?
Great. Well, I wanted to call because I have two concerns about in listening in this morning. One is that I feel like listening to you guys, that you guys are playing into the hands by, except for a little bit ago, mixing up sexual orientation and sexual abuse for the listeners. That one of the problems in talking about priests and Boy Scouts is that there's not a clear dialogue about what is happy, healthy homosexuality and same-sex attraction, and what is power and control and the choice to abuse someone else. And
okay, I thought I made that clear. I didn't mean not to make that clear.
You did just recently, but the you know, in this culture in which one in seven young men are sexually abused by the same-sex person, you know, they walk out into the world. How are they supposed to know the difference between homosexuality and sexual abuse? And, you know, it's part of what the gay community, you know, and as a lesbian who does a lot of this work,
yeah,
we haven't taken the lead in separating out the two because we're too afraid to talk about it. And part of the reason we're too afraid to talk about it is because the second piece is this idea that, you know, sexual repression is what causes sexual abuse. And I know you guys aren't really saying that, but it's sort of coming out that way. And
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I could see I could be misunderstood by that. Yeah, I didn't mean to make it sound like that.
Oh, I know you didn't. That's why I'm calling.
Oh, good.
You know, I love Air America, and you know, and I think it's the only vehicle through which people are getting accurate information.
So you're saying that sexual abuse is what I was saying after that is really it's a pathological, it's a sickness.
Yes.
And it doesn't come from sexual repression per se.
No, and I think that people can, you know, be both a homosexual and a sexual predator.
Right.
But they don't, you know, but to think that those of us who grew up sexually oppressed and in the closet have been, you know, counting down to when we can, you know, become predators is just, you know,
right.
That's the flip side of how it's being said. And so here's what the Boy Scouts can do. The Boy Scouts can take that argument and they can say, huh, so here's what can happen then. We can't open up our scouting troops to homosexuals until the world is completely liberated for sexuality, because until then our kids aren't safe from these repressed sexual beings.
But here's the thing, Kathy.
And I don't disagree with you guys at all. I'm just kind of
clear. You just clear it up.
No, I understand that. But Kathy, here's the thing: when you look at the Boy Scouts and you look at the Catholic Church, both have already in place very specific prohibitions against gays being involved in these activities. Yet the fact of the matter is that they already contain and have had for some time, apparently, gay people involved in both.
But this doesn't stop them from having crazy arguments.
I'm not.
Look at the senator up here in Maine who put that legislation out about how, you know, prohibiting abortion so that gay kids wouldn't get aborted when the gene gets identified. I mean, they'll twist anything we say if we're not accurate.
Well, I appreciate your clarification. I guess, you know, right now there's just a sort of a strange you know, percolating in my head, because I guess you're a social worker of some sort, yeah?
Well, yeah, you caught me.
Okay. Well, you know, when you have homosexual adults who were abused by homosexuals as children.
Yeah.
You know, what type? How does that manifest itself in their confusion and their anger as grown adults?
Well, I still think that either way, it manifests in terms of really screwing up the ability to come to a healthy sense of sexual identity.
Right.
But it's also, the manifestation is still the same as it would be with the heterosexual kid.
Yeah.
Here's the difference between sexual orientation,
right.
How you have a happy, healthy relationship with someone of the same gender or bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
Or heterosexual, because sexual orientation is any of that, and then sexual abuse. This is the horrible stuff that happened to you.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you're going to grow up to be a predator, and it doesn't mean you're going to,
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a lot of work and a lot of language, and sound bites don't make it easy.
And I'll tell you, I think that these predators, it should be like the number one priority of law enforcement in this country is to stop this stuff.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your call.
Well, see, the irony there is Jim West was in law enforcement.
Well, I know, but this is like he's like...
And so was Han.
Yeah, I mean, he was a Boy Scout leader. I mean, this stuff, it's just the repercussions and the amount of people that this stuff affects in a very secretive way, in what people are hiding, in all kinds of ways, shame, hostility, anger, and self-hatred. It's profound. 47 past the hour, Air America Radio. We'll get back to this.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
One past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
What's up, buddy? So we've been talking about this, about Jim West and about sexual orientation, about sexual predators. It's just important to know that, the right always wants to characterize homosexuals as sexual predators, which isn't true at all. And what we have with someone like Jim West is someone from the right who is a closeted homosexual, an accused someone accused of child molestation who refuses to acknowledge either, has legislated or tried to legislate against homosexuals, and, is now on the hot seat and should, if it is found out that he is guilty of child molestation, should certainly do jail time. But this is not, I don't want to confuse things, and I don't want to say that, sexual abuse necessarily leads the abused to be an abuser. There are ways that people can help themselves. These people are victims of one of the most horrendous crimes that I know of, which is adults abusing kids sexually. And this has nothing to do with gender specificity. It doesn't have to do with, whether or not you're homosexual or heterosexual. This is a pathology. It's a sickness. Okay, what is this call? What do we got? Steve in South Carolina, what's up?
Hey, I work for a child sexual abuse organization.
Yes.
I'll make some comments. Number one of the problems we have in America is like when we train our kids at 3 years old, we say you got a mouth, you got a nose, you got ears, and most people then say you have a wee-wee. We don't use scientific terms, and if we were like upfront with our kids at 3 years old and started explaining what it was, they will feel more free to talk to the adult and the parent about this. The other thing is that it's not just the police responsibility. It's every adult's responsibility. This is an epidemic. You read the newspaper every day, what do you see? A headline about child sexual abuse.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. So you're saying that it's not just the police's responsibility, it's the parents in the community, it's listening to kids, it's trying to, find out what's true and what isn't true without, throwing accusations around.
And giving the kids a vocabulary.
Right, absolutely.
Make your sexual organs something that is, embarrassing, that we have to use a cartoon term.
Yes.
But that's where the problem begins.
Right. I get you, Steve. Thanks a lot for your call. Educating your kids properly about what's at what they're dealing with and having a vocabulary that isn't shame-based is certainly a good start. So I'd like to shift gears a little bit, if I could. And now, I want to do my liberal confessional, so we're going to clear the phone lines open up to – we're going to lighten things up a little.
is this lightning?
Sure. It's been an amazing conversation we've had about this, and I'm sure it will continue, later in the week in a different form, especially if we continue to talk about Jim West up there in Spokane and see how that story unfolds. But it's not always easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves – We can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, I was just in Cincinnati, and I was performing, and everyone was nice to me.
So what's the problem?
Well, I don't think you understand. They were really nice to me.
You leave New York City, and people are frequently really nice. That's just how it is.
You don't get it. They were in my face with their nice. You know, it was relentless. All right? I'm a really big fan. You know, how can I make you... You know, they were sort of like, I'm a really big fan. How can I make your stay more comfortable? Here's a free ball cap. Everything I say is hilarious to them. And you know what the weird part was?
What?
They meant it. And I couldn't handle it, buddy. I was mumbling and sighing and grinding my teeth and trying not to make eye contact because they were constantly making it with me. And I kept waiting for one of them to say, you fell for it, loser, and then stabbed me in the back, but no one ever did.
So wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You feel guilty because you could not accept simple kindness?
Yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, they are supposedly our people, right? The ones we go on the air to help and entertain, and that's fine, you know, on the radio. But when I meet them...
You freak out.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, I'm like, here's a good argument for universal health care. Here's some Democrats you should vote for. Here's some jokes about my cats. Now go away. Go smile at someone else. You're being too nice to me.
So you can't reciprocate, huh?
Well, I can reciprocate, but only for about 5 minutes, and I shut down. If I could just, you know, hand out some Air America keychains and not talk to anyone, that would be perfect.
Mary, you need penance.
All right. Yeah, hit me, Brother Riley.
Invite one of our bloggers to the office and ride the elevator with him or her all day long, just talking about the show and about how great you are. Let's see if you can survive being killed by kindness.
Okay, can I just give him a hug or something and then split?
No. But you do get an hour for lunch. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess, seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We'll be taking confessions over the break. It's funny that, you know, although I confess that, I have a hard time, accepting the love.
Yeah,
other times I'll talk for hours with somebody I don't know. But please call us with your confessions and we will process them and put you on the air with your sins. After this, you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're in the middle of our morning confessional, our liberal confessional segment. I've given my confession, and now we're going to be taking your confessions here in the liberal confessional booth. Also, I wanted to thank our buddy Bob, who does the podcast for us. You can podcast Morning Sedition, and you can go to morningsedition.com for details, because I know a lot of you miss us, and we're on in the middle of the night for reasons that are out of our control. And you can do this now. You can get an iPod or one like that, an iRiver, something, and listen to our show. Let's take some of these confessions right now. Leah, streaming in Illinois, what do you have to confess? What's your sin this morning?
Hey, Leah.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen. I love your show. Thank you for what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I am generally not a pacifist, but I am a nonviolent person.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to take the woman who left the message about Rachel Maddow, stick on her chest, and beat her head against the ground, screaming at her, stop being so obsessed with people's sexuality.
Right. That's interesting.
I want to hit her.
For a nonviolent person, that was a very graphic and well-articulated violent fantasy.
I'm serious. As a straight girl who lived in redneck hell, I deal with homophobes on a regular basis, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in, we played a message about Rachel Maddow commenting on Spokane Mayor Jim West and that whole case up there of his accused child molestation. And this woman who left the email professed to be a liberal, but just could not deal with Rachel's gay agenda. Yeah, I guess there are some liberals out there, there are Democrats anyways, that are completely intolerant of homosexuality. And I agree, it was definitely a crappy thing to say about Rachel. Do you listen to Rachel's show, Leah?
I try. It's on really, really early here in the morning. I usually stream it. I'm a I'm a former Unfiltered blogger.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
Well, I guess you know, I understand your sentiments, and I'm not sure I disagree with them, but as a penance, because you are generally a nonviolent person, for about a week or two, you're going to have to get up and listen to Rachel every day.
That's not penance. I'll do it. No problem.
You want worse penance than that? Find it.
Uh-oh.
How about this one? Find one of these homophobes that you're surrounded with and talk them through it to the point where they're no longer homophobes.
But what about if I bind and gag them and take them to a drag show?
And then you can take them to a bondage bar. What the hell? They're already dressed.
I'm in Southern Illinois. There isn't
a... Yeah, do whatever you want. Go crazy.
There you go.
Thanks, Leah.
Guys.
Bye.
Thanks.
It's weird when you can't give an effective penance because you're sort of like, yeah, I understand her sentiment there. That's it. All right, let's take another. Hey, Jay in Detroit, what's your sin, Jay?
Hey, Jay.
What's your sin?
Well, I've been fantasizing about shopping at Walmart. I don't shop at Walmart. I'm opposed to the things that they do. I think it's a horrible company. And yet they have cypress mulch for $2.44 a bag.
You've just summed up.
I've been fantasizing about getting it for my yard because everywhere else it's like $5 and up.
So you're fantasizing about mulch, Jay?
Well, I'm fantasizing about purchasing it at Walmart because it's so cheap.
I understand what you're saying. I think there's only one penance. I think you got to make your own mulch.
Yeah, there you go.
I think you're going to have to start taking those coffee grounds and the pet poo and the, you know, the leaves. And,
right.
And you know, you're going to have to get yourself one of those bins in the back and do the work.
Yeah.
If you, you know.
Can I do my penance with the last caller?
Ooh, a wise guy.
Sure, you can both make mulch and then go to a bondage bar. That's fine.
There you go.
Cool.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Jay. But, you know, he just summed up the dilemma I think that all progressives have as consumers. You know, those dollar flip-flops that you can buy at Walmart are a tremendous incentive. I know.
Yeah, but you know what? I get them at the 99-cent store. Don't they have 99-cent stores other places?
Yeah, they got 99-cent stores, but they don't last as long as the Walmart.
You can get the same Chinese quality...
In a DVD,
sandals,
or anything else you want.
At a small, family-owned 99-cent store anywhere in the New York area. They have them all over the place. It's the same crap.
Yeah, but in Detroit. They may not have 99-cent stores.
I don't know. I haven't shopped at a Walmart. I can honestly say I've never shopped at a Walmart. I don't know why. I just haven't. You know, I found myself in Walmarts before. There are other stores that you can go. Like, what's the one you go to? That's a blue-friendly store. Costco.
Costco, yeah.
Yeah, there's other ways to go with that if you really need to deal. You know what I'm finding out that's weird? I'm finding out about IKEA. What about them? Well, the planned obsolescence, you know what that is? That's like, you know, things that are designed to go back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, theirs is literally a year. They have built things. Like, their particle board is designed to start coming unglued in about a year. All the stuff I bought at IKEA when I moved here, like my couch, the blinds, everything's crapping out on me. Everything's breaking on me. It's unbelievable. It's like a year later, now I got to go back. That's genius.
They pull the wool over your eyes for this long. You didn't know that?
Swedish genius. What do you keep looking at? Over there. Who's there? Is there someone in there?
No.
Oh, all right.
No. Not yet. Last time we were looking like that, Robert Reich appeared on the other side.
That was when it was dark in there.
Yeah.
You just saw Robert Reich's head. So now we're going to start talking about. I have this guy that we're going to have come on is a pretty interesting guy. Rodney Rothman has written a book called Early Bird, A Memoir of Premature Retirement. This guy used to write for Letterman. He was a head writer, burnt out, decided he'd retire early, go to Florida prematurely as a Jew to enjoy some early retirement. And he's written this book of stories about being he was like 27 or 28 years old when he went down there to write this book about being a retiree at 28 in Florida. And I've certainly got my own stories because my mother lives in Hollywood, Florida. I'm sure he's got stories about the Rascal House and about who knows what. Let me tell you the kids today. But I've been on Letterman a couple of times. I wonder when he was writing there. I'm looking forward to talking to him about that and some other stuff. But he's got to have some funny stories. Got to have some funny stories about the retirement community. My mother used to date a guy who was a condo singer.
Really?
condo
singer?
Stanley, the condo singer.
Not a lounge singer.
Yeah.
Not a bar singer.
No, not this was
a
it.
Condo singer?
Yeah, this was before Jazz Guy. What's a condo singer?
She had an incredible run of men. There was the doctor. There was the Congo singer.
Condo singer.
Condo, not he's Congo a, he's singer. He wasn't black.
He's basically a guy. He's basically not. Well, you know, I mean, my mom's not you know, racy.
I know, but she didn't date no Congolese guy.
No. Well, you know right?
Not that I know of, but my mother has secrets, that's for sure. I do know she dated the guy who sold T-shirts at the beach for a while, but I, you know, that was another story. But the condo singer was a guy who, I guess, basically, you know, he went around and he booked gigs at condos and he'd sing musical numbers and, you know, with a piano accompaniment to people sitting there listening going, what? What did he say? Oh, it's from Fiddler. From Fiddler. Oh, I love this. It's from Fiddler. So I think that's basically what that is. Maybe this guy, Rodney Rothman, actually came across him. Yeah, this is all, you know, my mom's a live-in beau now. John Jazz Guy is probably like, who the hell is he talking about?
Wait a minute. I'm trying to figure. These are the guys that you go into a senior citizen's home or whatever, and you see on the activity board, a picture of them, you know, just finished playing in northern New Jersey, and they come to Florida, and this is the gigs. These are the gigs.
All those Catskill comics do these condo circuits. Some of these condos are huge. You got thousands of people living in them, and they got nothing to do, and it's part of the entertainment package that you get at the condo. Like, let's go see Mousy Lawrence. You know, let's go see Mousy Lawrence down at the dance hall. You know, they're their own communities. But I don't know. Maybe Rodney Rothman's got some condo singers. You know what? My mother's going to be in town this week, fellas.
Uh-oh.
I just thought I'd let you know.
She's you bring her in?
Well, she wants to come down on Friday.
Yes.
She wants to come to the studio.
Yeah. Bring her in.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, that's right. There'll be food. Well, don't try to scare her. My mother's anti-food. All right. So we'll be back after this with Rodney Rothman, the author of Early Bird, a memoir of premature retirement. Stay with us for the funny. It's 14 past the hour.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less at Air America Radio.
Team past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo,
it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Look at this. This our guest here in studio. The book is Early Bird, a memoir of premature retirement. Our guest Rodney Rothman was a head writer at Letterman, and he decided to retire at 28.
Mm.
Is that real though? Did you really retire?
No, I wasn't. I was really testing retirement out early.
Okay.
Really what I was,
All right, so you decided, like, what the hell? I'm going to Florida. I'm a Jew. That's where my people go.
I wanted to see what I was heading for, you know? I was working so hard, I just wanted to go see what was the end game of all this.
But you knew, though, kind of. Didn't you have grandparents down there or something?
I did. I got enough of a taste of it when I was a kid in both good and bad ways.
Yeah.
I really just wanted to go and check it out. And beyond that, I actually, in a lot of ways, I liked it down there when I was a kid. And part of me just wanted to go to the only place I'd ever been relaxed in my life.
Yeah.
Because I needed to relax. I definitely wanted to.
I grew to like Florida as I got older. When I was a kid, I remember visiting my grandparents down there. It was nice, but there, I went through a period where I thought Florida was awful, but now I find it to be a very interesting place.
Really? Well, it is, I think when you're older, it's interesting for totally different reasons, but you didn't like it when you were a kid?
I like going to the beach and stuff,
right,
but there was a period there where I what it represented to me was just this retirement community. But as you go, as you visit there now as an adult, mm-hmm. it's a very diverse, strange, densely populated place.
It's crazy messed up, yeah. So one of the weirdest.
What did you find? Like, what were some of the high point experiences? Did you move into a retirement community?
I did. You basically,
how did you pull that off? You don't look old.
You know, and I didn't have to wear old makeup or anything like that. I literally got there and I called Roommate Finders of Florida.
Uh-huh.
I told them I want a roommate over 65.
Yeah.
And they were not bothered by that.
Okay.
And they called me back 2 days later and they said, there's a woman, she lives in this community called Century Village. About 8,500 people live there.
Yeah.
You can go stay in her spare bedroom. And I did. Wow. I moved in the next day. I moved into this condo. I had a security pass.
She didn't have weird expectations. Did
you? that crossed my mind. As it happened, she just wanted the money. You know, she wanted the income.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
But and she was a really interesting lady. I mean, she was kind of an odd lady. You know, and she had cats. She had parrots. She had the whole menagerie of animals in there. And But I kind of grew to like her, you know. But the animals I wasn't so crazy about.
So now when you went out into the world,
mm-hmm.
What are some of the stories that you talk about in your book? Like outside of the fact that you're living with a woman who has cats and she's 65 years old and has parrots and you're living in her spare room,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure you got a lot of fodder out of that.
Oh yes. Yeah.
But I mean, going out into the world and presenting yourself as a retiree to these people, what were their responses?
Well, first of all, most of the time I just thought I was someone's grandson. You know what I mean? At first. I would tell them that I was writing a book, but, you know, and the thing is, they don't care what you're telling them. I mean, I don't want to present them as, you know, I mean, like, most of the people I knew down there were not lonely or anything like that, but I think they were happy to have, no one thinks their grandson visits them enough. So
right.
I was kind of like the surrogate grandson. You know, I was like the
8,500 people?
I was the jar opener for 8,500 people.
Sure,
but,
sure.
And, you know, I would get going pretty early.
Yeah.
I would try to sort of experience the life sort of the same rhythm. So I'd get up. You know, first of all, these parrots would actually get me up at about 5:30 in the morning.
Because mm-hmm.
literally the parrot learned how to imitate my alarm clock.
Really?
It was like psychological warfare. And,
yeah.
and every morning at 5:30 would just start going, beep, 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 beep.
The parrot would do that?
Parrot would do that. It's hilarious. When it first starts happening, you think, like, that's funny. I could write about that in my book even.
Yeah.
That's a funny idea,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And then it just keeps doing it.
Okay.
You just want to just jam the thing, you know? But
and when does the woman that you live with get up and start making noises?
She honestly would not get up till around 10 or 11.
Oh, that's
good. She was like living the 18-year-old version of retirement, and I was living like the 81-year-old version of retirement.
You were getting up early on purpose?
I was getting up early on purpose. See, I couldn't believe it. The first time I walked out of there, it was 6:30 in the morning, and I saw literally five guys washing their cars at 6:30 in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing, so I wanted to get a piece of that, you know? And I got involved in a shuffleboard club, which I didn't want to do, because everybody, when I went down there, they'd always ask me, are you going to play shuffleboard? It's like the big old person joke, and I just didn't want to have anything to do with it. But these guys, basically what I learned was that shuffleboard as a sport is dying out, literally, because younger old people don't want to play shuffleboard because they think it's an old person's sport. Like, 75-year-old people say to me, I don't play shuffleboard, that's an old person's sport.
What, it's for people who are 90?
Yeah, like, they play tennis, you know? They play tennis, they try to play more active sports, so...
Handball is popular.
Yeah, badminton, all that stuff. So they literally... The shuffleboard club was this ever-shrinking club. They're kind of like the dorks of the community, and they grabbed onto me as this sort of shuffleboard baby Moses that they could just send down the river.
Messiah!
You know? Like, and they would fill me, the vessel, with shuffleboard information, and they made me come, like, every day and practice with them and play in their tournaments, and it got kind of, like, vicious, like, you know, like,
oh, wow.
But I learned a lot about shuffleboard, you know?
Wait a minute, were you a shuffleboard hustler or something? You didn't take people's money,
did you? You know something? I couldn't if I wanted to, because they were way better at it than me. There's a whole other level. It's not just moving a disc around.
I know.
There's a strategy involved, and even to this day, I don't fully understand it.
Really? You don't understand the complexities of shuffleboard?
You know, honestly, I think you have to be 80 years old to get it. I think you have to have your testosterone drop to the point where, you know, you can hit that zen-like shuffleboard point, you know?
Did you ever sneak off and play badminton with the older guys?
You know, I did play tennis a few times, and the shuffleboard guys walked by the court as if I'd betrayed them, you know?
Wow.
And I crossed to the dark side, because they really regarded the tennis players as, like, you know, at your age, basically. You know,
you're
gonna exactly. There's all these weird rivalries in the retirement community that you wouldn't think about.
What about cards? Did you have any cards?
I did. I played poker. I really wanted to play Canasta, because that was what my grandmother used to always play. Canasta was this weird, unbreachable citadel for me. Like, the women would never... It's all women that play Canasta. And they'd always invite me to their games, and they'd never tell me where the games were, you know?
Right.
It was almost like it was a secret right.
Did they allow men in? Let you in?
I literally pretty much never played Canasta.
What about Mahjong? Did you get any of that?
I did once play Mahjong.
Yeah?
I don't understand that either, but
it's
I did.
It's a very deep game that's only understood by old Jewish women.
Or it's any men Chinese. whole country.
But that's a whole
I've got to ask this question, because there is this whole, I think, myth. Well, maybe it's not a myth, but mm-hmm. I mean, there's this perception across the country that Florida and these condos for the elderly are populated almost exclusively by Jews. Isn't
mm-hmm.
that true?
That's not true.
It's not true.
And it really varies geographically, too. On the Atlantic coast, you're going to get a lot more Jewish people. On the Gulf coast, you're going to get a lot more Midwesterners.
Okay.
And it literally is because, I've been told it's because the highways dump out on different coasts.
I
was in the Midwest, on the Gulf coast. So, you know, starting in the 60s, they kind of, you know, they just developed connections to different parts of the state. So when I went to the Gulf Coast, I played in a senior softball game on the Gulf Coast, and it was like, these guys were like these corn-fed, massive guys. Like,
right.
They were way better at softball than I was, you know?
Well, wait a minute. I know
a lot of French Canadians now, and Germans down where my mother lives, coming down
Snowbird
in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of French Canadians. There's French language newspapers down there. A lot of Canadians in general in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, people from Ontario, I think, also tend to.
Did you hang out with any of them?
On this trip, I didn't as much, but I remember when I was a kid and my grandmother lived down in Miami Beach, and I remember there was all these rivalries between the French Canadians and the Jews, and, you know, there's always, you know, everyone's always yelling at somebody.
Oh, there's still, the boardwalk. I go to the boardwalk with my mother, and you go past these places that they sell poutine.
Oh, really?
And they got all these, sort of French Canadian, cuisines and stuff.
It's crazy. And that's the least weird part of Florida.
Yeah, that's the weird part. I think it's pretty weird in general.
Yeah.
So, did you have to change your dinner schedule?
I did.
Come on.
I really did. Like, because I would hang out every day. I'd hang out at the pool from 1 to 4, 4:30. And then everybody just really goes to dinner. Some people down there don't go to eat dinner at 4:30. That's, you know, it's a bit of a cliche a little bit, but lots of people do, because that's when
would that be the newer, older people?
Again,
the younger, older people?
Again, the younger,
well,
younger,
older,
the young
people.
Old people don't think that they're old people, you know?
All right, we'll talk to you a little bit more.
I'm making
it. We're talking,
victory left.
To talk more about his retirement and also a little bit about writing for Letterman as a young man. We'll be back after this on Air America Radio. Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're talking to Rodney Rothman about his book, Early Bird, a memoir of premature retirement. He was a writer for Letterman starting at age 21, became the head writer, and then split after a couple of years, decided he was going to try premature retirement in Florida. And we've been talking to you about that experience. Now, what I want to know is, like, I've always loved talking to old people in general, because these are people that have seen life. They've lived through some things. They have a perspective. They don't panic as much as I do, because they've lived through so much.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any real nuggets? Were there any real personalities that really, you know, sat you down and blew your mind with their wisdom?
Okay. In some ways, not really. no, I mean, I met amazing people. I had, like, a great experience down there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, part of, like, the, I guess, that I was kind of looking for a Maury type figure.
Sure.
Because I thought if I found one, I could just sell tons of books. You know what I mean? I definitely did not find Maury. Like, I looked hard, you know? I had 6 months to look for Maury. I did not find...
You were casting for Maury?
I absolutely was, you know? I knew a lot of older guys down there.
Yeah.
I didn't find one Maury. So what I kind of realized eventually was that the problem was that the guy that wrote that book, he spent one day a week with Maury.
Yeah.
That was his problem. If he had spent, like, more than one day a week, that guy would have ran out of things to say by Wednesday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that said, the coolest guy that I met, my favorite guy... wisdom-wise.
Yeah.
I knew a guy down there. I met him because he was a real estate broker. And he was showing me a condo before I found this other condo. And he was a really weird guy, like, gave off a weird energy, but I kind of liked him. And, you know, and then he asked me to play golf at the end of this thing.
Yeah.
And my answer to everything there was yes, always. I just always did everything. So I played golf with him. He turned out to be this guy, mid-60s, had spent 30 years living overseas, living this kind of crazy hedonistic life, hustling, doing all kinds of illicit things, kind of like the life I would secretly want to live.
Yeah.
And then 30 years later, he and his wife moved back here, moved to Florida near her parents, who are like in their 80s and disapprove of him as a match for her still. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And now he doesn't have any money. He basically has to start working now.
So now he started hustling, living a hedonistic life again.
Yeah, well, he basically has to work, you know, he's making money. And he doesn't know what he wants to do for a living.
I wonder if my mom dated this guy.
He probably did. Knowing this guy. I'll tell you his name afterwards in case you want to do some due diligence.
Is he from the Hollywood area?
Yeah, he might be around there. He might be around there. So he and I would hang out, and he would kind of say to me, you know, man, I haven't figured out what my thing is yet, you know? I've got to figure it out.
Oh, my God.
He's in his mid-60s, you know?
Oh, my God.
But don't get the... See, you can either get depressed about that or...
I'm not depressed. I'm just thinking of my own future.
To me, that made me happy. I was like, oh, great. I don't have to figure anything out, you know?
Yeah, but you're not broke either.
You know, but this guy had lived the coolest, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was a cool guy.
Yeah.
He really was. But that was as close to wisdom as I got in some ways, you know.
Well, this sounds it sounds like a great read. I know there's some people that I like who recommend it, so I'm looking forward to plowing through this and having some laughs.
Mm-hmm.
So you started writing for Letterman when?
When I was 21.
And that's really young, so you must have had quite a package in terms of jokes. They
wanted to hire four younger writers at the time and have them fight it out for a job, basically.
Package is the word for the writing package.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right away, Kay was like, oh, dude.
Come on.
The package means more than one thing, for God's
sake. Yeah, really.
So they basically gave me a 13-week tryout, and they were going to fire you after 13 weeks if it doesn't work out.
And how'd you find working with them?
I loved it. I mean, that guy literally gave me a career, you know?
Yeah.
He just plucked me from, you know, I was 21.
What school did you graduate from?
Middlebury College.
So it had nothing to do with any of this placement of Harvard writers or anything else. That makes me so happy because Dave's my guy. I grew up watching Dave from when he started when I was in college, and he's got the most class, and he's got the most, he's just the best broadcaster out there, and I think the funniest late show host around. Definitely the heir to Carson. And when I did the show, finally the third time I did it, he actually said something to me. He actually said that you can make those jokes work in clubs. You know, but he was being nice.
That's cool. I never actually met him, but that's cool that you did. Yeah, it's cool that you did.
But, you know, he was always a pretty good guy.
He was great. He's a totally, you know, straight shooter, like he's not two-faced at all. I learned a lot working with him, and I owe my career to him. So
I'm glad to hear that about one of my own heroes.
There you go.
Well, Rodney Rothman, good luck with the book. Early Bird, A Memoir of Premature Retirement. You can go to morningsedition.com and get a little discount on that. Thanks for being here. Have a good time on the Today Show.
Thanks, guys.
All right, man.
So, listen, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have this iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. From the Washington Post, Bush offers support to Georgia. Bush offers support to Georgia. Translation, frantic Georgians disguise oil wells braced for U.S. invasion.
Yeah.
From Fox News, gay straight men's brain responses differ. Gay straight men's brain responses differ. All right, translation. Researchers discover possible genetic cause for drinking apple teenies. From Reuters, pizza delivery ends prison siege. Pizza delivery ends prison siege. Translation, guards, inmates resolve tense standoff over toppings. I'd like to read the writer who wrote this. I'd like to see their package, Chris. You like that? Do you just like the word package? Oh, no.
Whoop.
Colonel Jones is in the booth. He's about to show us his package.
There you go.
I'm sorry, Chris. I forgot that word would make you laugh. Like
no, it's
that.
Okay, buddy. I'm just going to isolate that and play it whenever I feel necessary.
Yeah, once you play it right alongside of me, saying I love Jerry Springer like my father. Why don't you do that?
Yeah,
that'd be some funny stuff. And do it whenever you just want to, kind of mutiny.
Inject a little levity.
Mutiny the show and say, like, oh, Marin's had enough. I'm going to make the funny now. Would you do that?
Or whenever the show's not funny.
I love Jerry Springer like he was my father.
Yeah. Good news, man. That's good news.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
I'm going to bring my own board in. How's that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to start programming some little things onto this board right here. Secret behind your back. I know how to work this stuff. I'll just get the manual out, and I'll sit with it for a couple hours. I can figure out your job.
Yeah, good luck with that. The manual.
Yeah.
I love Jerry Springer like he was my father.
All right. I get it. I get
read the manual.
You did? Really?
4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm ahead of the curve.
Oh, there you go.
I'm thinking maybe it's time for a refresher course. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
Oh, now you're hitting at the man's professional.
No, I'm kidding. The guy's he's a genius, and I'm happy he's here, and I'm a big fan of his package.
Well, you know, he's very happy. He's a happy man today because, here in New York, we've had this problem between Cablevision and the MSG network.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been able to watch the New York Mets play baseball for the longest time.
And now he can?
Until yesterday.
Yes, a Democrat, the state attorney.
Attorney General.
The Attorney General. Thank you, Mr. Riley. They worked it out. MSG and Cablevision, MSG and Time Warner Cable worked it out so that I can watch all of the Met games.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, yes, my package is even more, even bigger now because of the Mets are on it.
That's your writing package or your literal package?
My cable package.
Just cable package.
Cable package. Oh, right, the cable
gutter,
package. I'm sorry, man. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. So, are you looking forward to this?
Your homie's over there.
Who's that?
Who you think?
Mr. Sam Cedar.
Yeah, Sam Cedar. The one and only. Fortunately for you, he doesn't have his mic up over there. He doesn't have his speakers up.
Are people able to tell the difference between him and Springer?
Uh-oh.
I mean, on the radio?
Uh-oh. Wait a minute.
Huh?
Wait a minute.
No, is he coming in here?
No, he's not. No,
it's all right. It's all right.
Here he comes.
I read a couple emails yesterday.
Hey,
people,
you think Chuck D coming in here now, pal?
Weren't able to tell the difference between Springer and Cedar, except that Springer used a couple more words and stuff. They're like, yeah, well, Cedar sounds totally the same as Springer, only uses more words and things.
Look who showed up to work today.
Someone got
sick. Something. Yesterday I came in here, and the general feeling of just contentment.
Yeah.
Your absence was. It was impressive.
Yeah, I don't.
I expected to come in here and see people are tired everybody was smiling. They had cake,
balloons.
It was impressive.
And there's people here with balloons, just standing here with balloons in the middle of the morning. I was teetering. I'm sorry. I'm doing my little impression. I mean, balloons. Can you believe it?
Well, I think it's apparent to your audience why you are doing this as opposed to impressions.
That's very funny. Can I ask you a question? Since I've last seen you, have you gotten more Jewy? I mean, is there a possibility? I mean, is it the payas? Yeah, I don't know what it is. Do you seem more
is
Jewy?
Is it the payas?
Wait. All right. Look. Are we going to fight like this?
I just heard you mocking me from the other studio. I figured I'd come in and put you in your place, and I feel like I've done that.
That's good, man. Sounds like love
to me.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I shouldn't be impressionist. I should be on the radio. You're absolutely right. And so should you, because let's go over how many things you have failed at in the last 2 years. How about the film career?
Hey, I saw one of his films on IFC the other day.
Are you sure it wasn't Louis C.K.'s?
No, I saw that one, too, but I saw one that Sam was in.
Which one?
I don't remember.
Yeah, but that's the problem with his whole film career, is that he did quite... I'm sorry, man. I think punditry is really... Did you know that Tucker Carlson's looking for somebody to do rehearsals? You up for that?
Did you fill in for him?
No. They want to practice beating up on a liberal. Do you want to do it?
Oh, yeah. I would love to do that.
Yeah. We'll talk to...
Did they call you?
Well, they called me. It might be a little late for me, but I figure that, you know, one Jew or the other. You know what I mean?
Maybe they just wanted to start soft with you.
Yeah.
Maybe they wanted to wait until they had to build up... He gave him enough chops to deal with me.
Is there any way have you been able to simplify things that they don't take 3 hours to explain? Are you able to do that now?
What do you mean?
I remember early on, I don't listen to your show because it's on too late.
Well, no. When I was explaining Social Security to you, it took 3 hours, but that was a function of who I was explaining it to.
I don't think that was true because you had spent the week leading up to our time together trying to explain it as well, and now I'm sure that explanation has shifted. So I'm just wondering, are you getting any better at getting the talking points a little tighter?
Well, I guess not, because I just explained to you, but maybe we need to take an hour after.
Oh, my God. I'm exhausted.
I know.
I'm exhausted.
I'll tell you something. I just woke up. You know, Josh, don't worry about the coffee. I'm fine now. All right, I'm going to go prepare for my show.
Go sit in there.
I don't kill time like you guys kill time.
That's right. You bore people with the explanation of whatever it is. It's good, though. It's exciting. There's some people that like
he is always, Sam.
Is he still laughing? Why is he laughing?
I don't know.
He should be crying, shouldn't he?
No.
Did I lose? All right, 45 past the hour. We'll be back in a second.
I love Jerry Springer like he was my father.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python. If you're like me, you're tired of having geeks and dorks repeat things you said 30 years ago back to you as if you don't remember saying them and then laughing as if they think they're so damn clever. I mean, wow, you memorized a 30-year-old movie? Oh, good show, old chap. Oh, great. Be president of the United States. Come on. And now for something completely different. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to land this thing now if we can.
Hey, man. Sorry to interrupt you, buddy, but that yelling guy, the guy from Puddle, he's on line one.
The guy from Poodle. Yeah. All right. Put him through. Put him through. So, hey, how's the...
The revolution.
revolution?
Yeah, yeah, I know you like to say it. So how's the revolution going? You guys, you still called Poodle?
We are no longer called the Progressive Underground Destabilization League. We are now called the Geo-Global Action Liberal Stormfront.
And what did we talk about last week when we discussed the naming of the group?
Write it out. Check the acronym. Make sure it doesn't spell out NAMBLA, Poodle, or Balls.
All right, so you did that with this one?
Yes.
So you're the big, scary liberal group called GALS, and you're okay with that?
GALS is a fine acronym. What you are insinuating is sexist. Besides, we have a lot of gals in our group, so let's just stop it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to frighten you.
Oh, you're scary, all right. So tell me. You said last week that you were starting to move on some things, revolution-wise, to take the fight to the conservatives, use their own dirty tricks, etc. So what's up with that? What are your plans? You need to get more proactive. Where are we going? What's happening?
As it happens, I am calling for just that reason. We are coming together. We are mobilizing. Some of us gals are getting together for a rally.
Wow, some gals getting together, okay.
Are you ready to rally? I'm inviting you here. Will you join us, gals?
I need to know a little bit more about it, pal. What kind of rally is it?
A revolutionary rally on a topic that will be decided once we have come together and, decided on it.
So the topic's not decided, huh?
No! It's a surprise!
A surprise, okay. So where is the rally?
We are going to storm the city. We will march through the steps of City Hall. Then we will turn the corner. And then all of us together will find a bistro with outdoor seating. We have to have a table outside because my Shih Tzu stompers cannot be left alone at home. Also, there must be room for a stroller because the Johnsons have a little boy named Ben. Then we will inquire about the wait time. If it's not too long, we will put our names down with the hostess. Code names. Did I mention the bistro must have egg substitutes and be a peanut-free kitchen? My girlfriend is allergic.
Whoa, wait. Dude. Yeah.
Yes,
Mark. That's not a rally, man. That's a brunch.
A revolutionary brunch.
No, man. Look, I'm afraid I'm going to have to pass on attending your rally. Gals are a joke, pal. I liked it better when you were called Balls. I mean, Balls are scary.
You'll be reading about this brunch in the papers, Mark.
Yeah, okay, buddy. I got to go.
Should we save a seat for you if you change your mind?
No, that's all right. Goodbye now.
I'm okay. Call you later.
Wow.
Oh, no.
He's a scary man.
He's out of control, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Riley.
He must have quite a package.
Yeah. What is that? How did that turn around so quickly? How are my own words being used against me from all places?
It's a miracle is what it is.
Oh, my God. I think I'm feeling a little better. I'm going to have to watch my voice, though, for tomorrow. You know what I mean? Got to take care of it.
Tea, honey, ginger.
Got to take care of it.
Sauna.
Oh, yeah. You know, someone came up to me in Cincinnati, this woman who was very thrilled about our show, and she gave me a little rolling Jesus.
A rolling Jesus.
A rolling Jesus with movable arms. I'll have to bring it in tomorrow.
Yeah.
I can roll it around right here. She was thrilled. You know, did you know that the Reform Judaism movement started in Ohio? Did anyone know that? How do you like that? I didn't know that. I was told that because, of course, when I was on stage, I said, are these the only Democrats we have in Ohio? And there was laughter. And and then it turns out, no, there was a lot. They just didn't come to the show. But nonetheless, I found it. You know, I said, what about Jews? Any Jews? And there was like nothing. I'm like, really? No Jews? And then someone came up to me. I'm one. You know, but then someone told me that the Reform Judaism movement started there. I had no idea.
I had no idea.
So let's do this now. For those of you who are just tuning in or didn't get to hear the whole show, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program, or some not so much, but these were supposed to be talked about, or maybe they're in the news.
We thought about it.
Yeah, it's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Conservative groups urge to vote urge a vote to end the filibuster. If conservatives don't act now to end the filibuster, they might actually have to experience what Democrats had to put up with during the Clinton administration. How's that?
There you go.
U.S. is losing billions in tourism. Foreign visitors have complained that the U.S. is a fortress now. Even Disneyland has changed. The new attraction is it's a small, hostile third world threat after all. Spokane Mayor Jim West's secret life shocks community. Give him credit. He's one of the few politicians actively pursuing younger voters. The good news is he has a summer jobs program. The bad news is you'll be working directly under him. West denies the charges and says he will be exonerated by the body of evidence. The hairless, quivering, nubile body of evidence.
Nubile.
Yeah. There's some of your Morning Sedition clip notes today for this is Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
So
yeah.
What happens, man? What do we got going in tomorrow?
Anything oh, man, we got somebody special coming in here tomorrow.
Who's that, my friend?
Eli Wallach is coming in here
tomorrow. Can we ask him about the good, the bad, and the ugly?
We can ask him about the good, the bad, and the ugly. We can ask him about Godfather 3. We can ask him about any number.
Yeah, why were you in that movie?
In? Yeah, really.
Well, we can find that out. He's been in a lot of movies. He was one of the great method actors. I think he came out of that group theater with Lee Strasberg. And
oh, yeah.
I think he's been around that long. Very respected guy. But I remember he played the Mexican in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, didn't he?
Yeah, he was the one that they had. He was hanging by that little slender thread.
Yeah, he was great in that.
And Clint Eastwood was going to shoot the thing out from under.
He was also in Mystic River. He played liquor store owner.
Wow.
You remember the liquor store owner where the guy got shot with the same bullet? You remember? That was Eli Law. Oh, he's been in everything.
He's got everything.
Is he coming in?
He's coming in.
Oh, sweet. This will be good. Maybe he'll be. Oh, yeah, I'm excited.
Hey, you don't want to miss this tomorrow. All Baron, right. Great show today.
You too, buddy.
Feel better. We'll see you tomorrow here on Air America Radio.
He must have quite a package.
Edition on Air America Radio.